Christmas cheer starts here at Matalan. The countdown to the big day is well and truly on. And here's your chance to save big. Stock up and slay with 20% off home gifts and decorations in store, online at matalan.co.uk and via the app now. T's and C's apply.
With Robinhood Gold, you don't need a silver spoon to eat up the financial favors of the 1%. Robinhood Gold allows the resourceful individual to earn the very liberal rate of 4.5% APY on uninvested cash and be rewarded with a handsome 3% retirement boost on an IRA account. Robinhood Gold provides the privileges of a high net worth for any net worth for just $5 a month. The new gold standard is here. Sign up at Robinhood.com/gold. Terms apply. For product-specific disclosures, visit Robinhood.com/gold. Investing involves risk. Rate may change. Gold membership is offered by Robinhood Gold LLC.
Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Galazzo, joined as always by Peter Flaherty on a surprisingly warm day for you up in Massachusetts and me in Virginia. How you doing, Peter?
Doing great. Like you alluded to and how we talked about a little before hopping on, it is weirdly warm up here in New England. It was like 80 yesterday. It's like 75 again today. It's legit shorts weather, so it's a little bit of a screwing with the mind, but I'm not complaining at all because it's probably the last time it'll feel like this for like 6 months up here. So
yeah, well, we've got probably a little bit longer than you down here, just a few states south, but it is nice to just drag out the nice weather and get outside a little bit before we have to shut it down completely
in that no department. Doubt.
But yeah, so we're back for another draft review series of the show. Last week we did the American League East draft reviews. If you missed that, that's on the feed. You can go check it out if you really want to dig back into 2024 draft classes. Today we are going to be talking about the American League Central draft classes, just kind of working through each, talking through a few players. But I guess before we get into that, Peter, do you want to do any housekeeping, anything you want to know? I know we typically do this at the end of the show, but maybe I'll put it to the front here for today. If you've got anything you want to plug, promote, anything you want to chat about before we get into these draft classes, feel free.
Yeah, nothing crazy. It'll be up by the time you're reading this. Top 10 or 10 of, I think, or 10 freshmen that I think will make an impact in 2025 for college baseball. That was a fun piece to write. There are obviously a lot more than 10. We don't really know exactly the roles that anyone will be taking on, but you can kind of project a little based on what they've done in the fall. Padres top 10 will go up, I believe, in
2 weeks from now, right now, if you're listening to this podcast on Friday, we'll have all of the National League East top 10s on the site. I believe next week is National League Central and then National League West. And then we'll start heading into American League.
Yeah, and I guess to piggyback off of that, every single day now for the foreseeable future, there will be a top 10 and a coinciding chat. So that's a ton of fun stuff.
The chats are always really interesting to me. I like getting, like, there are a lot of really insightful questions that are always asked from the readership, which is good. And then just getting into the mindset of the writer and how they view separation of tiers and like sleeper prospects is always really cool. And there are always like interesting player development nuggets that you'll get as well. Like Matt was talking about some of the things the Mets were doing specifically with how they were developing some of their hitters, I thought was interesting. So definitely check out those chats and participate if it's either a team you're passionate about or just you want to get into the weeds on like the process of it all. It's always fun.
Yeah, so that stuff's a lot of fun. And then obviously buy the handbook. So it's might be the off season in terms of the calendar, but we actually have a ton of great stuff coming out each day. And before you know it, we'll kind of be post holiday college baseball season on the horizon, and then really like 0 to 100 from February all the way until late October, November again. And the Arizona Fall League still has a little over a week left, so there'll be fun content from there as well.
No doubt. Yeah, there's no real off season here at Baseball America, which is a wonderful thing. So definitely dig into all the prospect content. Check out Peter's stuff. There's some good analytics content on the site as well. I think catered towards fantasy specifically, but I imagine most prospect hounds are just generally interested in that sort of content. So, all right, let's get into the meat of today's episode. We're going again through the American League Central 2024 draft classes. We'll start with the Chicago White Sox. They picked fifth overall. They drafted Haken Smith, left-handed pitcher out of Arkansas, signed him for a big $8 million bonus. In the second round, they took Michigan High School shortstop Caleb Bonnemer. In the compensation round after the second, they took Blake Larson, left-handed pitcher out of IMG Academy. In the third round, they took Arizona State outfitter Nick McLean. In the fourth round, Virginia outfitter Casey Saki. And then in the fifth round, Coastal Carolina infielder Sam Antonacci. For me, I put on a low slot, low release point arms theme for this draft immediately after the fact. They have seemingly targeted a lot of those pitchers in recent years. And then with Hagen Smith and with Blake Larson, they're two kind of premium arms in this draft class. They get that. But they secure one of the premium pitching talents in the class in Hagen Smith. We kind of expected him to go somewhere juiced in this top 10 range. He goes 5 overall. What are your thoughts on the White Sox draft class, Peter?
Yeah, I think when starting with the White Sox, they're an organization that obviously has a steep hole to climb out of. But I'm with you on the general theme where it's like low launch, kind of outlierish heaters. I think with Hagen Smith, people at this point know who he is. It's you can stick a 70 on his fastball and slider. He's off to a really good start in the pro ranks. And then I think in the middle rounds in day two, I'm really intrigued by the Phil Fox, Aaron Combs combination, particularly Phil Fox.
Yeah.
He was really, really good at Pitt last year. He threw his fastball, I think over 90% of the time, or right on the nose at 90% of the time. Through 36 and two thirds innings, it was 45 Ks to just 3 walks with a 1.4 ERA. Fastball will be like 2-4, but it's a really outlierish and low release height. I think of like sub 5 foot, I want to say, maybe not sub 5, but it is really low. Yeah, it is sub 5, and it plays higher than the low 90s velocity, especially at the top of the zone.
Yep.
He threw it only 7% of the time last year, but I am really excited and kind of curious to see how the slider develops, because I think that could be a potential closer to a 55 than a 50, maybe eventually a 55 type pitch, but like reliever all the way. But it is an intriguing combo of strikes and stuff. And I guess you could say the same about Aaron Combs. It's more of a low 3/4, almost sidearm slot. High 80s, low 90s fastball, but it plays up thanks to the release and the characteristics of it. And
he threw 7.2 innings in a pro debut after signing, didn't allow an earned run in 6 of those relief appearances, and all those innings, struck out 13, walked 4, and averaged 95 and touched 97 with his fastball. So that was a pretty good showing for him in the debut. And I think I had seven of the college pitchers the White Sox drafted that we have data for have release heights on their four-seam fastballs that are below 6 feet, which I think around 6 foot is the average. So, again, not sure if like this is just something they're targeting with all their pitchers, or they just happen to have a bunch of guys who share those traits. But that has been something that has stood out to me about like what they clearly are taking players early in the draft that have some of those traits.
Yeah. So, I mean, I like that duo, even though they both kind of scream reliever. Especially Phil Fox. Like, I think that's a fun duo. And then I do like the college bats that they took earlier on. Nick McLean, like, it was his first year, I think, in his entire college career where he was fully healthy at Arizona State last year. And
yeah,
he hit .342, 18 doubles, 12 jacks, more walks than Ks. I caught him over the summer, or the previous summer, on the Cape, and I was a fan. Really compact, kind of explosive operation in the box, feel for the barrel, arm is above average in right field, quick hands. I think there's a lot to like with him. And then Casey Saki as well has kind of long been a notable name, performed well at UVA, tapped, kind of reverted back to what he was like as a freshman, where he really stood out. And then in his pro debut, I thought he performed really well in high A Winston-Salem. They kind of throw him right to the wolves.
Yeah.
Hit .290 across a 93 AB sample size with a handful of extra base hits, a couple of home runs. I'm kind of curious to see how the hit tool progresses as he goes along here, but, solid draft for a team that I think needed it.
Yeah, they definitely do. I mean, obviously they're not going to be picking earlier than 10th in the upcoming draft. A lot of people aren't too thrilled about that, but this is kind of the system that we're in now. I'll touch on just two of the high school players they drafted, second and third picks, Caleb Bonnemer, Blake Larson. I really quite like Caleb Bonnemer, especially getting him 43rd overall for $3 million. I'm really enamored with his power, speed, athleticism combination. He has a super unusual offensive approach. I'll be curious to see like or not approach, but like a mechanical setup in the box. He's super rigid. He's almost too still at times. A lot of scouts were very skeptical of like how that was going to work because it's just a setup that you don't see a lot. I know a lot of scouts just want to see some more natural rhythm in the box, but it was an approach that worked for him against some of the better pitchings on the high school circuit. Obviously performing on the high school circuit is different from performing in pro ball. So just seeing how that setup for him evolves, if and when it does, I'll be intrigued about. But we had above average tools for him across the board outside of the hit tool, which I think is exciting. I actually think he probably has a chance to stick at shortstop, even though he's big for the position. I liked his actions. I liked his arm strength. I think he has good hands. I think he could be really good at third base if he does have to move to the corner. So I like him quite a bit. And then Blake Larson, who they took at 68 overall and signed for $1.4 million. I think of him as kind of like an Alex Clemmy light. He went a little bit later in the draft than Clemmy did and signed for maybe about $1 million fewer dollars. But he has really exciting pure stuff, a fastball that is consistently into the mid-90s, probably going to get into the upper 90s in the near future. A hammer of a breaking ball with high spin rates, but really just has never shown consistent control and command and has a lot of reliever risk for me. It's not a profile that like I am super enamored with in general, but if you're a team that can like either help him add some more command and control or just kind of smooth out some of the things in his delivery, there's a lot of moving parts. It's a tricky look if you're a left-handed hitter trying to face him, but there's certainly plenty of stuff to be found here with a guy like Larson. So those are the two high school players at the very top. I'm not sure if you have any thoughts or takes on either of them, Peter.
Yeah, I'd agree with both with what you said on Larson and Bonnemer, Bonnemer especially offensively. Am I allowed to give one sleeper deeper?
Yeah, of course.
Not super deep. Yeah. 11th rounder Blake Shepherdson from San Francisco was kind of all over the place at San Francisco last year. ERA near 8, 29 walks and 30 innings, but in a brief stint in the draft league this summer, didn't allow a run across 5 1/3 innings, 11 Ks to 2 walks. This is another kind of, you mentioned it, I guess, outlierish fastball. He's 6'5", sub 6 foot release height, but he's got the potential for a really deadly two pitch mix. It's already pretty, I'd say, thunderous, but the lack of strikes, or if he can improve upon the strikes, it'll help it play up even more. But his fastball has been and will sit in the upper 90s, was up to 100 with life through the zone. He pairs it with a really hard sweeper that averaged almost 15 inches of sweep last year. Just as one Achilles heel has been the lack of strike throwing and lack of refinement in the pitchability department. So I think if he can take a step forward there, that's another guy that has kind of fast moving reliever written all over him, but the strikes are a real key.
Yeah. Another name I'll just highlight as a later, maybe sleeper is Pierce George. He had a very limited track record in college, dealt with some health concerns, dealt with some control issues. I think his total college innings were just 13.1 innings, but he has flashed this really impressive pure stuff when he has been on the mound. I remember last fall, ahead of the 2024 season, there were a lot of scouts who were kind of intrigued by what he was showing on the bump. So a lot of question marks, not a lot of confidence about the command and control with Pierce, but 6'5", 98 to 100 mile per hour fastball, hard slider, another pitcher who has a lot of pure arm talent to work with.
Yeah, and I guess to put a cherry on top, Lyle Miller-Green has, you could put him toe-to-toe with anyone, I think, in the entire draft from a raw power perspective. It just might be a 30 hit. So
yeah,
if the hit tool can take a step forward, that's another interesting one. But he's got big-time juice.
Cool. All right, well, let's move into our next team here. It's going to be Cleveland picking number one overall. Probably unsurprising that we're going to be pretty excited about this draft class. They spent, I think, $2 million more than any other team. They just had so much capital to work with, both in terms of signing bonus dollars they were able to spend and just the pick capital they have picking first, having some extra picks. They take Travis Bazzana with the 1-1 pick to my detriment and to the mock draft's detriment on draft day. Bit of a bummer to whiff on that one, but they took him first overall. They took Braylon Doty at the 36th overall pick, right-handed pitcher out of California. In the second round, they took Jacob Kozar, a catcher out of North Carolina State. In the third round, they took Joey Oki, a right-handed pitcher out of Iowa. In the fourth round, they took Rafe Schlesinger, a left-handed pitcher out of Miami. And in the fifth round, they went with another arm this is kind of a theme of their draft class, Adam Major, right-handed pitcher out of West Virginia. So, Peter, I'll pose it to you this way. How much do you love this class as the resident Travis Bezzana bandwagon, or I guess Travis Bezzana train conductor? You've been on this one for longer than anyone I'm aware of, so this is your time to shine.
I'm a huge fan of it. Obviously, Bezzana serves as, I think, a solid anchor to the class, but maybe to some people's surprise, and even you, whoever's listening to this, I actually think that the supplemental pieces behind Bezzana might put it over the edge and kind of, you know, it's a really, really deep class and looking through it. And I think what also plays in Cleveland's favor is they're, I think, one of those organizations that you kind of pay a little bit closer attention to with who they select, especially on the mound. Just given their developmental track record, especially in the pitching side. And I think that they drafted a lot of arms that I really, really like. And we've talked about Bezzana so much at this point. But I mean, for me, he was my favorite player in the draft class for a long time now. Yeah. It's a really appealing blend of hit and power and just as explosive as you can get in the box. Mm-hmm. So,
and I'll say it sounds like already Cleveland has been excited with what they've seen from him on the defensive side. Like, he has made some adjustments to his arm stroke already. It sounds like he had just kind of gotten into a routine of throwing from a lower slot and was just comfortable with that angle from the positions he was making plays at second base. And he has worked to just add some more versatility. And I think the fact that he has just thrown so often from a low slot has kind of maybe even helped him with his arm slot versatility, which is key for infielders. And I think everything that you assumed would be the case with just how Scouse talked about his makeup and his work ethic are already translating into positive player development, at least anecdotes. We'll see how it actually pays off next year. But yeah, I mean, this is one of the very best hitters in the class. We had really high expectations with him for a reason. He's probably going to be the number one pick in the system from day one. I think he's already number one right now. And I'm kind of working through the Guardians prospect handbook right now, but I'm leaning towards just making him the number one prospect in the system. So a very impactful, probably like safe feeling prospect to lead it now.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think that the intangibles, as you alluded to with the makeup, also, I think just put him over the top and is what put him in a tier above like the Charlie Condons and Jack Caglione's of the world, at least leading up to the draft. But I mean, it's a 80 makeup, loves to play. He's a winner. I mean, we saw it, I think this year they won the Midwest League in year one, and he had a big hand in that. He had a huge home run, I think, either in the championship series, championship clinching game, or the playoffs, but he had a handful of big swings during their run. He kind of came into his own after some initial growing pains, which were expected. So he's off to a strong start. The pick that I really, really like, though, early on is Braylon Doty. I personally would have taken him in the first round, but the fact that they were able to snag him with their second pick is, I think, massive and very, I think the profile of a high school pitcher with little to no reliever risk is kind of rare these days, but Doty fits it to a T. Like, I think he's a starter all the way. It's a strong, durable build, particular physicality in his lower half, like super low effort, repeatable delivery with a lot of strikes. Fastballs went up to 95 with some carry at the top of the zone. And then he's got a plus slider that he can really spin, and then a distinct curveball on top of that. So he's also turned over, I think, you know, a handful of solid changeups, and it could profile as a perfectly fine fourth pitch. So,
Well, you really like that pick. You're enamored with Braylon Doty. I'm really enamored with Joey Oakey. We had them side by side on the draft board. We ranked Braylon Doty 47th overall. Joey Oakey was the next high school right-hander on the board at 49th overall. So in terms of like how we viewed them as prospects, that's basically identical. There's really not any significant separation there in terms of just where we're slotting him on the board. I loved Joey Oakey when I saw him last summer. I loved the combination of just the size he has, the delivery on the mound, his release point. It's like a lower slot that gets almost sidearm at times. Creates a ton of life on his fastball. It's a pitch that both has great power now. I think you can project more power moving forward and just natural movement that's going to make it a pain for right-handed hitters, just running back in on their hands. And then he paired it with, I think Braylon Doty is kind of the spin monster in this class. The fact that he can throw both a slider and a curveball with like 3,000 plus RPM spin rates is pretty compelling. And again, it sounds like he's a guy who showed up after signing, and curveball maybe was even better than Cleveland was expecting it to be, which is, I mean, it was already a pretty high threshold to clear for that pitch. But I really think Joey Oki's slider is a tremendous pitch. We had a plus grade on it, 83-86, a good power for a high school pitcher already. Lots of good shape and biting action, just hard. It's just a hard power pitch that I think is going to pair really well with the fastball. Maybe have a little bit less confidence in the strikes compared to Doty, but I really love the fastball slider physical combination that you have with Joey Oki. He'd probably be my favorite arm in this class, despite him being drafted in the third round and signing for about $600,000 less.
Yeah, and I think that he's on a laundry list of fun arms in this class. Like Rafe Schlesinger from Miami is another one who has outlierish traits. It's a low three quarters, really more sidearm than it is low three quarters slot, actually a really explosive fastball. It's been up to 96 with a long, lengthy slider working on a third pitch. The strikes have improved year over year. It's just kind of limbs flying at you and a whole lot of deception. So that's another fun one. Aiden Major, similarly, if you can just refine the fastball a little bit, but he's got another, you know, the secondaries kind of help him out a lot. West Virginia right-hander. And then even just, I mean, there are two more that I really like in the eighth and ninth round.
Yeah,
a little bit similar to the Phil Fox, Aaron Combs duo with the White Sox, Donovan Zach, a lefty from Rutgers, and Sean Mattson, a righty from Harvard. Like, that's a really fun, I think, late day two reliever duo. And I know that people might get scared off a little bit with hearing reliever, but like these two guys, I think can be really, really fun. Zach, the key for him is strike throwing. He's a two-time, I think he's been twice Tommy John, right? It's been at least once, but
I think so.
But regardless, he's a low mileage arm. Like I think that he's a really fun, moldable ball of clay. He showed really well, I thought, on the Cape over the summer in the lead up to the draft. It's where he really improved his stock, or at least solidified it. Fastball's up to 98, and it averaged almost 21 inches of ride through the zone. Can really spin it. Supplements it with this hammer breaking ball that will really flash at times. But again, he needs to clean up the strikes. But I think that, you know, that's some relatively low hanging fruit. I think you can clean up. And, you know, he's a low mileage arm. Really fun one at that. I think he showed pretty well in his pro debut as well. Like the strikes were still an issue, but he didn't get hit around a lot. He didn't allow a lot of runs. I think it was a sub 2 ERA across like, 9 or 10 innings, struck out 13, but if he's around the zone more consistently, that'll really serve him well. And then Sean Mattson from Harvard, he was someone two summers ago on the Cape that, I mean, I really liked, and he opened the eyes, I thought, of a lot of scouts. He didn't allow a run across 21 and two thirds innings, struck out 26, only walked 3. He's got this invisible fastball that really plays up at the top of the zone. You know, he's got this, he supplements it, I think, with two really quality secondary offerings, like the fastball for what it is, which is this high, really low 90s pitch. You know, it's, he gets the most out of it. But the main attraction with him are his secondaries. His slider's got a ton of sweep to it. He throws it with conviction. It's I think a 55, and then his mid-70s changeup gets great separation off his fastball, like upwards of 14 to 15 miles an hour. It's got a ton of tumble. Basically just disappears 1 to 2 feet in front of the plate. Like, that's an easy 6 for me. So I think, again, while he's most effective in this reliever role, like, that's a I'd be really happy getting him for 20K under slot in the ninth.
Yeah, and Sean Mattson, he showed up on Cleveland's draft report card as most intriguing background. His family is super athletic. His father played baseball at Delaware. His mother played softball at Yale. And his sister, Erin, is probably one of the more famous female athletes in UNC's history. She won 4 straight national titles in field hockey, then graduated, became the head coach of the team, and won a 5th straight in her first year as a coach, which is just kind of cool. One other player I'll mention here, For the Guardians is Ryan Cesarini, who is a 14th round outfielder drafted out of St. Joseph's. He was a player that I did not know a ton about prior to the draft, but he had extremely positive reviews after his pro debut. I think the Guardians are really intrigued and excited about his bat speed and the power he showed. It was similar top end exit velocity numbers to Travis Bazzana. He hit 283, 375, 44 with four triples, four doubles in 13 games with low A Lynchburg. So it's a small sample, but I know Cleveland was just really impressed with what he showed and how he looked. Good combination of bat speed, swing decisions, foot speed. That's kind of a fun one in the 14th round that's already paying some dividends.
Yeah, in a similar breath of day three sleeper, I'll go Cam Schulke in the 19th round. Multi-slot specialist, like legitimate multi-slot. He'll throw from high three quarters near over the top, more low three quarters sidearm, and then straight submarine. Has a really interesting career path that started in Northwood, which is a Division II school in Michigan. Really opened some eyes that following summer on the Cape League, where he won reliever of the year. And this was following a season at State College of Florida. And then he proceeded to transfer to Mississippi State, where he threw really well and kind of earned this bigger role as the season went on last year. Pitched his way to a 4.2 ERA, 47 Ks in as many innings pitched. He throws a four-seamer, a curveball, a slider, a changeup. I think it's a legit five-pitch mix, and it all varies on the slot, and he mixes his slots really well. It's a very unique and uncomfortable look for opposing hitters, needless to say. And he's actually been up to 90, 91 from over the top, which I really is, like, you hear that and it's nothing crazy, but it plays up when you go from seeing 83 to 84 from down under, and then he kind of abbreviates his delivery with this shorter arm action and kind of surprises you up with a 90-91 mile an hour fastball. And he's got really impressive feel for his secondaries, particularly his curveball. That's a real knee buckler from over the top. It's got huge depth to it, more depth than like teeth, I would say, but the feel that he has for it, I mean, he'll land it for strikes and guys will just kind of freeze. So really fun reliever arm, had a really strong pro debut with single A Lynchburg, didn't allow an earned run across 8 2/3 innings, struck out 11. So that looks like a nice little hit in the 19th round so far.
Cool. All right, let's get into Detroit. This is basically like San Diego 2.0 for me with Rob Metzler and Mark Connor, the way they've drafted the last few years, continued with their kind of high upside, more risky strategy that a lot of teams just wouldn't want to pursue. They picked 11th overall in the first round. They got Bryce Rayner, shortstop out of Harvard Westlake. In the second round, they took right-handed pitcher Owen Hall, another high schooler out of Oklahoma. In the second supplemental round, they took Ethan Schiefelbein, a left-handed pitcher out of Corona High in California. Keep an eye on that school for next year's draft class. In the third round, they took Josh Randall, right-handed pitcher out of San Diego. In the fourth round, they took Michael Massey, a right-handed pitcher out of Wake Forest. And in the fifth round, they took Jack Penny, shortstop out of Notre Dame. I guess just general thoughts on the Tigers for me. I really have just liked their overall draft strategy in recent years. I like when teams zig or the rest of the industry zags, and it really feels like the Tigers have like just a willingness to take risky profiles. They've been going high school heavy. Looking at their draft classes in recent years compared to what they did like 10 years ago, is just significantly different in terms of philosophy or an overall approach. So I like it, even though like Bryce Rayner, I might be like a little bit lower on him than in general. Like, I just didn't see Bryce Rayner hit a lot last summer, although admittedly he made a lot of good progress with his swing during the spring and was a standout, was consistently viewed as like one of the better high school players in this class. Super tooled up, has power, has massive arm strength, great frame. Everything looks the part with Bryce Rayner. He's not the best runner. Maybe he slides to third. Maybe he has enough arm strength and just instincts and defensive ability to stick it short as kind of a slightly oversized, although at this point I don't even know if like 6'3 is oversized for a big league shortstop. Maybe it's not anymore. And then some high upside high school pitchers right after that. Owen Hall, really big fastball. Ethan Schiefelbein, really well-rounded arsenal with a above-average curveball, above-average control. And then some pitchers further down the board that I'm really intrigued by as well. But Peter, what are your thoughts on the Tigers?
I'm with you where I'm a fan of the class. I think with Bryce Rainer, the key, and it's not a secret at all, is just how much is he going to hit. I mean, if he hits, the upside here is pretty massive. Like you mentioned, he's an absolute tool shed.
Yeah.
Double plus arm. That's legit power from the left side. He's already got a big league body. And then my favorite part about him, which we might never see, probably will never see, is his ability on the mound. Like it's really, really loud. If you have access and you can check it out, I would, but he moves really well. It's big time arm speed, fastball in the upper 90s with a banger breaking ball, but again, probably will never pitch. So that's a moot point. I do like getting Owen Hall in the second, same with Ethan Schiefelbein in the comp round in the second. And I think Michael Massey in the fourth is a pretty good value because
dealing with some injury, pitching in a new role did not help his draft stock. I mean, I probably prefer him in the bullpen just given how dominant he looked in that role and just not a great look at him as a starter. Maybe with health, like his fastball and slider will look as good as they did a year ago. But man, he really has two impact pitches and showed solid control out of the pen in previous years and probably has one of the more unique fastballs in the draft class.
No team wins the World Series without having great teamwork. And teamwork can also protect your financial legacy and your family's future. SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents are the perfect teammates when shopping for customized, affordable life insurance. They can find you the right policy to keep your financial legacy safe. SelectQuote is one of America's leading insurance brokers with nearly 40 years of experience helping over 2 million customers find over $700 billion in coverage since 1985. Other life insurance brokers offer impersonal one-size-fits-all policies that may cost you more and cover you less, while SelectQuote's licensed insurance agents work for you to tailor a life insurance policy for your individual needs in as little as 15 minutes. You invest so much time to take care of yourself and be the healthiest, best version of you. SelectQuote's exclusive policies can reward that effort. If you're in good health, they work with carriers that get you same-day coverage for up to $5 million with no medical exam required. And these policies are more affordable than you may think. You can get coverage for up to $1 million for as little as $20 per month. Head to SelectQuote.com and a licensed insurance agent will call you right away with the right policy for your life and your budget. SelectQuote. They shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less at selectquote.com/BA. Go to selectquote.com/BA today to get started. That's selectquote.com/BA.
When creating your own business, the most important part is your ideas. So why let the headache of registering your business hold those ideas back? It's time to learn about a great idea that will keep you going and growing, LegalZoom. LegalZoom has everything you need to launch, run, and protect your business all in one place. Setting up your business properly and remaining compliant are things you want to get right from the get-go, but you don't have to strain your brain or wallet. LegalZoom saves you from wasting hours making sense of the legal stuff. At LegalZoom.com, you can take care of business legal needs in just a few clicks. And if you need some hands-on help, their network of experienced attorneys from around the country has your back. Over the last 20 years, LegalZoom helped start, run, and protect millions of businesses. LegalZoom, now you're in business. Launch, run, and protect your business to make it official today at LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL to get 10% off any LegalZoom business formation product, excluding subscriptions and renewals. Expires 12/31/24. Get everything you need from setup to success at LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL. LegalZoom.com and use promo code BASEBALL. Disclaimer, LegalZoom provides access to independent attorneys and self-service tools. LegalZoom is not a law firm and does not provide legal advice except where authorized through its subsidiary law firm, LZ Legal Services, LLC.
When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. If you hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed at Baseball America is that it makes hiring easy. Everything's in one place. I get my applications. I get notifications when I get new applications. I get to contact prospective candidates all on Indeed. I can move people to the next level all on Indeed, and we can keep all of everyone on staff involved in the hiring process up to date, all at Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/baseballamerica. Just go to Indeed.com/baseballamerica right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/baseballamerica. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, it's really fun stuff with Massey, as you said. Like, he was way more effective, I think, in a relief role, but I think that you can develop him as a starter, and they're at the very least going to try their darndest too, because like you said, there is a lot of, I think, appeal to him from a stuff standpoint, and he understandably went through some growing pains in a new role, or I guess he began his career as a starter at Tulane, proceeded to transfer to Wake, where he was this lights out reliever in his sophomore year, then went back to a starter last year. And he was just okay. As you said, he dealt with injuries. So fastball is, I wouldn't call it a unicorn, but it is a really, really unique offering. It's averaged over 20 inches of ride, and then he supplements it with this big time curveball with immense depth. It's got some teeth to it. I think the key for him is just going to be the development of a third pitch. And then I think also the command and control aspect. I think that's another one to watch. And I think something that we'll need is take a step forward. Jack Penny in the fifth, I think, is a really interesting pick. There isn't, when you look at Penny and you watch him play, like, you're not going to leave the yard being like, okay, this is his carrying tool. He just does a lot of things well. Like, he's just, I think the best way to describe him, and it might be a little boring, is he's just a damn good baseball player. Like, nothing will stick out to you, I think, negatively, and nothing will be like, whoa, like, this kid, you know, he's got huge juice, or he's got a cannon arm, or he's got, you know, whatever, he can really run. Like, he just does everything really well. Low heartbeat player. You know, you can kind of plug and play him all over the infield. I think he fits best at third long term, but he's a shorthanded defender. The arm's fine. He'll hit enough. He'll put a ball in a gap or over the fence occasionally. So that's an interesting pick there. Maybe my favorite day two pick, though, is RJ Sales from Wilmington, UNC Wilmington at that. I think from, In looking at Sales and watching him pitch last year, because I watched UNC Wilmington a lot, just, you know, on the college side covering them, I really, really liked him. And his curveball, I'd say, is a plus pitch without a doubt. It's got massive depth, and it's got a ton of sharp downward teeth that gets a lot of swings and misses, and a lot of ugly swings and misses at that. Fastball has been up to 96, I think. There is some potentially low hanging fruit there to clean up, to maximize its effectiveness, maybe, you know, locating it better. And then the changeup, I think, is what you're going to want to focus on when developing a third pitch. It's firm. It's not a lot off his fastball right now. But in watching Synergy, there were a couple that he turned over that, had some late tumble with a little bit of fade to the arm side. So, that's a potentially fun arm. And then if you want to go for like a day three sleeper,
I'll talk before you get into day three sleepers. I'll give you one of my day two players that I liked. Maybe not a huge surprise, because I think this was the fourth largest bonus they handed out, but Zach Swanson in the ninth round, we ranked him around 130, 140 on our draft board. So getting him at pick 266, I thought was really good. He signed for the highest bonus of any ninth rounder in this year's draft class. But this is a pitcher who, I feel like I never saw him pitch poorly on the circuit when I was watching him. There were some maybe more critiques during the spring season that the control was a little bit more scattered. So like a lot of the pitchers we've talked about here in this draft class, I think there is A little bit of reliever risk, but it's a 6'3", 195 pound right-hander. Looks like a great athlete, power fastball, gets the pitch up to 95 miles per hour with high spin, above average riding life. And then he also has a really good breaking ball, low 80 slider, high spin in the 26 to 2800 RPM range. Both those pitches look like above average offerings. If he can maybe round out the changeup with a little bit more consistency and then sharpen the control and the consistency of his delivery, sometimes he's a bit effortful. I think that is just a really fun pitcher. So I wonder if the Tigers think that either they're higher on a lot of the control of these pitches, or if they just think that their player development folks are going to do some work in helping these guys throw more strikes, because it does feel like a number of these guys have some either control questions or just reliever profile questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think going back to Sales, just to round him out, his changeup of note, he threw it 1% of the time last year, so that was sort of a little bit of a deep cut. I think it could be an average, potentially fourth offering, but I guess some revisionist history to what I said about the third pitch. It escaped my mind that he throws a slider. It's inconsistent, but it has showed flashes. So, I mean, I think you have a chance here for potentially solid three-pitch mix with him. Missed all of 2023. The fastball and curveball are two, I think, solid building blocks to go off of, especially this curveball. But Lucas Ellisall in the 13th from Chipola, 6'4", 190 pounds, projectable frame. I think he moves pretty well on the mound. Fastball is only up to 93, 94, but I think spin is the name of the game here. His curveball is really, really flashed. I'd probably give it a 55. He threw a few that, you know, you could definitely call plus. And he also mixes in a slider. It'll kind of blend shape at times with his curveball, but he's got impressive field of spin. Both get their fair share of swing and miss. So that's an interesting arm to keep an eye on.
Yeah, you mentioned the JUCO products. The Tigers took three junior college players on the third day of the draft, and three JUCO players this year was more than any other team in baseball. In a 40-round draft, that would maybe be a shocking number, but in a 20-round draft, there's just not a lot of spots for JUCO players for most teams. I think it's nearly 80% from four-year colleges at this point. So that's kind of maybe a cool nugget as well for Detroit. They're just going for avenues that are less popular for most in the industry, which is fun, at least. Cool. Let's move on to the Royals then. Pulling up their draft board really quickly, but they also had a change. I think they were one of eight scouting departments this year that had some shakeups. Brian Bridges now calling the shots in this scouting department. This was his first draft as a director again since his Atlanta days, but they picked six overall. They took Jack Caglione with their first pick, obviously a two-way player out of Florida. In the second round, they took left-handed pitcher David Shields, high schooler out of Pennsylvania. In the third round, they took Tennessee right-hander Drew Beam. In the fourth round, they took Louisiana Lafayette right-hander LP Langevin, and then in the fifth round they took Tennessee right-hander AJ Causey. So a lot of different profiles there just with their first five players. Let's see, the theme that I threw on them immediately after the fact was standout strike throwers, both Shields, Beam, Causey, and then right-handed pitcher Tanner Jones, who they took a little bit later, I guess right after Causey in the sixth round. All were pretty solid in terms of control and command, and maybe that is a standout trait for a draft class that was filled with relief question marks and just erratic strike throwers in general. Maybe that'll be a focal point for the Royals moving forward. Not sure, but let's start off at the top. Jack Caglione, polarizing profile. What do you think about this class in general, Peter?
I'm with you that I like it, especially in a similar breath to a couple of the other teams. I like their middle round picks a lot, like especially Drew, that run of Drew Beam, LP Langevin, and AJ Causey. You could also throw Dennis Collar in there, their seventh rounder. Jack Caglione, as you said, one of, if not the most polarizing profiles in the draft.
It's gotta be like him, Vance Honeycutt. I mean, maybe those two.
Yeah.
Brody Brecht, I would throw in, I guess, would be another one.
Great call with Brecht. And I think with him, it's been the question mark and the key with him really for as his entire college career is how much is he going to hit? Like, you know, if he hits, it's a pretty loud and big time offensive profile. It's at least, I would say, comfortably 70 grade raw power. I'd say he performed at a respectable clip in his pro debut, hit 240 with 9 doubles, a couple of home runs. And then he's currently playing in the Arizona Fall League, where he's actually shown quite well, I'd say. Hitting 260 with 3 doubles and 4 jacks. So
I would say I would have been more pessimistic of his Quad Cities performance. And then I agree that the Arizona Fall League performance has been good. But in that stint initially, just the strikeout to walk rate and the lack of power that he was showing was not what you want to see for a guy who's definitely going to be a corner moving forward, and he just needs to tap into that power. But I mean, we have long been, I wouldn't say like skeptical, but it's just not like and a choice of Nick Kurtz versus Caglione. I think all of us would have taken Nick Kurtz. I guess we'll see how he adjusts and improves against pro pitching. And I do think like if he's able to just continue focusing on hitting, which I'm not positive if that's what they're going to do with him now, they select him as a two-way player. I don't know if they're going to give him like the Nolan McLean chance to do it a little bit when he starts and then later focus on just hitting. I hope he just focuses on hitting, because I think he can make a lot of strides if he just has to worry about one part of the game.
Yeah, and I think as far as the hit tool goes, if you want like a glimpse into that, it was an overall 27% miss rate in his high A stint with Quad Cities. I think, again, what's been his Achilles heel, though, is the pitch recognition side of things and expanding the strike zone. It was a 39% chase rate, including 51% against sliders and 40%, excuse me, against changeups. So
yeah, like, I had data for 158 debut draftees, and his chase rate, I think, was seventh worst of all of those players. And then among players with double digit plate appearances, or not double digit, among players with 100 plate appearances or more, he had the second worst chase rate behind Walker Yannick. So not what you want to see.
No, I would say that this AFL performance is really encouraging. Like, the ball flies there and the pitching isn't great this fall for the most part, but like, you'd rather him do this than not. So I'm curious to see if he can use this as a little bit of a building block heading into next year and into spring training. And I also will say that the Midwest League is notoriously hard to hit in, both like the ball, just, I mean, it's graveyard city out there in terms of ballparks, and then also getting thrown right into the wolves for better or worse, like right into high A after getting drafted. Like, that is a real challenge. So again, he did kind of show some of those qualities that had people questioning the hit tool, but I am curious to see how he looks in year two and with added reps, because the offensive upside is immense. It's just, can he get to it? So,
yep. Getting into some of the arms, I really like LP Langevin. His fastball is maybe the most intriguing pitch in the class. I mean, we talked about it, I believe, a little bit before, but it checks all the boxes I think you want analytically. It's at around 93, 94, touch 96, huge spin rates for a fastball, 2,500 plus RPM. It averaged more than 17 inches, both in terms of induced vertical break and arm side horizontal movement, which is just a wacky combination of movement, spin, and power for a fastball. I believe it was one of the best whiff getting fastballs in the entire country.
I think it was number one.
His a 46% miss rate is like a great rate for a breaking ball, like a slider. That's like, oh, that's a really good miss rate for a fastball. Like, I'm sure there have been some crazy whiff rates for college fastballs if we were to go back and track, but for a draft prospect, like a legitimate prospect, since we've had access to this sort of data, I can't remember a fastball with that sort of a miss rate. And maybe you could say, oh, it's Louisiana Lafayette, it's not SEC. I just think it's like a true outlier type pitch that is going to carry him, clearly. I mean, he should be using this pitch all the time. I think he pitched off it like 80% of the time last spring. So I almost don't care what his other pitches look like, but he needs to improve the secondaries a tick. I think improving the control a tick will be good as well, but man, it's a real fun pitch.
Oh yeah. And you brought up the point that I was going to use to piggyback off of it. Like, he threw it 80% of the time, which makes the 46% miss rate
truly insane.
All the more impressive.
It's like, you know, it's coming. You can't do anything about it. See ya.
Oh, he could signal it. He could signal it if he wanted to, and college hitters wouldn't have been able to touch it. And like, yeah. I think he's going to be just like a two pitch demon, I think, in their bullpen, and a potentially fast mover. Like the slider flash, the shape of it was inconsistent. Sometime it'll take on this more like kind of less teethy and less sharp gyro shape to it. And then at others, it'll take on, you know, this tight sweeper with some length to it. And I think if you can hone in on that and refine it, it'll, like you said, along with the strike throwing, if you can improve in that department as well,
yeah,
it'll really serve him well. And I guess if we're on the reliever topic, Dennis Colleran in the seventh round, I think, is a fun pick. Tommy John guy, he came back this year for Northeastern, and he was, I wouldn't get fooled with Colleran with the stats, just like I wouldn't get fooled with any college pitcher or even college hitter when looking at college stats. Like his ERA, if you see it near eight and get freaked out, I wouldn't. Like reliever all the way, but it's a really interesting and powerful east-west profile. He's got this like knuckle eating and fat two-seam fastball that's been up to 98-99. I think it was
a knuckle eating fastball is a great descriptor, by the way. I'm gonna have to pocket that and use it in the future. Love it.
I appreciate it, but it's just like it is, that's what it is. It's knuckle eating for right-handed hitters. It'll zoom away from left-handed hitters, and then he supplements it with this power sweeper. And I think the key for him, just like the key for a lot of arms, is some refinement in the strike throwing department. But what I will say for Colleran is he came into school with big time question marks around the strike throwing, and it did improve year over year. And after he came back from getting TJ, it took another step in the right direction. I think it was a 64% overall strike rate this year, which was really productive for him. 64% on the fastball, and then the slider was at 68. So, he was up to 100 with the fastball. And it is just this really uncomfortable east-west look. I'd say both are plus.
Yeah.
Fast moving reliever profile, physical kid on the mound. There's some deception to his delivery. I really like that pick in the seventh.
One later pick that I'll point out here is 16th rounder Andrew Moronis out of Cal State Fullerton. It's not the same sort of Langevin fastball. No one's is, but it's another fastball that has some intriguing traits to help it play up. 90-95. In terms of velocity, it's a lower than average release height, very flat vertical approach angle. And he generated a 19% swing strike rate in a 10 inning pro debut with that pitch. Also earned a 110 stuff plus grade on our internal metrics. So that's a pitch that's intriguing. Another pro debut, Nate Ackenhausen, he threw 9 innings, 5 relief outings, didn't allow a run, 9 strikeouts, 2 walks. And then I just kind of want to circle back to Shields, because we didn't really talk about him too much, but I really do like this pick quite a bit. He checks a lot of boxes, young for the class, was 17.9 on draft day, 6'2", 210 pounds, left-handed pitcher, smooth, easy delivery, multi-sport athlete. He also played football. The control is pretty consistent. We put above average control, which is a really loud grade for a high school pitcher who's this young. I think he's got a chance to have 3 pitches that are better than average between the fastball, slider, and curveball. The changeup is solid as well. So it's like he does not have the sort of in-your-face stuff that some other pitchers in this class do have, but I think he just checks a lot of boxes. And the more I watched him pitch, like the delivery is just really smooth. He's really balanced, steady head, very little recoil, very little effort. So him getting into pro development instead of going to Miami, I think is really exciting. I'm just very excited by his upside potential. And I also like the fact that the Royals got Drew Beam in the third round. He was a guy entering the year that we thought might pitch his way into first round consideration. And he was one of the more extensive and consistent starters in college baseball. I think in this draft class, you would be hard pressed to find a pitcher with more innings, more starts, and more consistency overall. He's probably going to need to add a little bit more oomph, just because there's not really a carrying pitch here, but it's a deep pitch mix with plus control. So I like that value in the third round.
Yeah, a little oomph is key. I think the changeup already, I'd give it a plus, but the curveball, it's like, you know, it has the shape and the depth that just isn't, as you said, it doesn't have the like real teeth to it. So I'm curious to see how he progresses, but the plus strike throwing is a really good anchor for him. He's already been up to 97 the changeup with him, I'd say, is the carrying pitch. It's hard to have a changeup, I'd say, be a carrying pitch, but if you were to call one,
especially
of his,
for a right-hander.
Yeah, exactly. So I think getting him in the third is big time value. And then another arm that I do like is AJ Causey. I'm really curious to see what they do with him, because he's this submarine sidearm guy, but he's been up to 93 from that really low slot. And I think the two moneymakers with him are his changeup and slider, both last year. I think the slider had a 45% whiff rate and the changeup had a 53% whiff rate. And it's not this like east-west profile of like a Dennis Colomer, where you have a two-seamer and this power sweeper, but it is like you have the changeup that'll kind of fall and fade with this frisbee slider. And the slider, I wouldn't get too caught up in the movement profile of it just because it will be amplified, especially the sweep from his lower slot. But it was 19 inches of sweep and then 22 inches of fade on his changeup. So and he can really, really spin the slider too. The spin rate has been up into the 3000s with it. He's a plus strike thrower. You really don't see, I would say, a sidearm submarine guy stick as a starter. Like, that's just a really unique, I'd say almost non-existent profile. And this is a deep pull here, but I'd say like the closest, like, sort of comp where it's someone who started in college as a submarine sidearmer and then they transition him to the bullpen and he's done really well is Tyler Cleveland with Seattle. He was a 14th rounder in 2022 from Central Arkansas. So I think that if I'm Kansas City, I put him in the bullpen and let that three pitch mix work because you can get some length out of him. I don't think that he's this 1-2 inning guy. You can stretch him out a little bit. So I like the bones with Causey. And there's reason, I think, as a whole to be excited about this class, especially if Caglione hits. If Caglione hits, like, the offensive upside and the impact that he's going to have is going to be pretty ridiculous, but that is a really big if.
Yeah, it is. All right, let's move into our final team for the division. That's the Minnesota Twins. They were picking 21st overall in the first round this year. With that pick, they took Kansas State shortstop Kalen Culpepper. In the compensation round, at 33 overall, they took Louisiana Lafayette shortstop Kyle DeBarge. In the second round, they took Tennessee third baseman Billy Amick. In the supplemental second round, they took left-handed pitcher Dayson Hill. In the third round, they took Loyola Marymount catcher Kadeem Diaw. In the fourth round, they took FSU outfielder Jamie Fair. And in the fifth round, they took UC Irvine outfielder Caden Kendall. So this class was very hitter-heavy. Early on, I believe 7 of their first 8 picks were hitters, Dayson Hill being the outlier. And then from the 7th round on, they were extraordinarily heavy on college pitchers. So I feel like this is kind of the strategy that most people want their teams to employ: hitters early, stack up on pitching later. And I think for the Twins, that strategy makes a lot of sense, because they have been excellent in terms of identifying college arms later in the draft and getting real major league value out of those players. Despite the fact that they didn't take a college right-handed pitcher until the 7th round, I believe they tied for the most four-year right-handers of any team in this draft with 11 players of that college right-hander profile. So that's just kind of interesting, and maybe just hammering a profile that they've really had success with in the draft in the past. But what are your thoughts on Minnesota's draft, Peter?
Yeah, I mean, I like it. I think the guy that I was probably most enamored with coming into the draft, who's a member of their draft class, is Kyle DeBarge. It's a pretty fun tool set and skill set packed into his compact frame. He's a really twitchy athlete, above average bat speed, plus bat to ball skills. You know, there's some feel to hit there. He's an impact runner. I think that there's just a lot to be a fan of. I think that the biggest key for me, and just the one thing I'm going to watch and see how it progresses, is the impact he's going to be able to generate. Like, what kind of power is he going to be able to get to? Because I think that, you know, while the hit tool is promising, like, it's not one that's going to serve as like an anchor to his profile, where any sort of power is just going to be a bonus. Like, I think he is going to need to impact the baseball a little bit. Really, everyone is going to need to impact the baseball. But I'm curious to see what impact he gets to. But he showed flashes in his pro debut with single A Fort Myers, hit a tick under 240, 6 extra base hits, 3 of which were triples. 15 for 18 in stolen bases and played split time, I'd say, between second base and shortstop. I think that he's eventually going to end up at second base long term. I just think that's where the actions in the arm are going to profile best, but he's a really good athlete. And then with Kalen Culpepper, he was someone else that I really liked coming into the draft. It's a really explosive in-sync operation, serious bat speed with quick hands. There's a feel for the barrel. I think you could make the argument that coming into the draft, you could stick a 55 on both the hit and the power. He only played 26 games in his pro debut, showed really well, I think, with single A Fort Myers, and then was just okay in 17 games with Cedar Rapids. But I'd say overall, it's an encouraging pro debut for him. And unlike DeBarge, I am actually pretty confident in his ability to stick at shortstop long-term. Mm-hmm. Like the actions and the arm both profile really well over there. The arms plus the actions and the internal clock really improved with added reps at the position after he made the switch from third base as a sophomore over to shortstop full-time as a junior in 24. So mm-hmm. I think that's a nice little 1-2 punch at the top of the class.
Yeah, and I'll hit on the next guy because Billy Amick, him at the 60th overall pick for $1.5 million, just under that. I'm kind of surprised that that's what he signed for, especially when you look at a guy like Tommy White with the A's, who was taken at 40th overall, signed for $3 million. I would view Billy Amick and Tommy White in a similar range on the board. I think we had them pretty neck and neck, like kind of near the back of the first round, fringe first round, just outside of it types. They get Amick a full round later and sign him for half the value that Tommy White signed for. That feels like good value to me. I mean, maybe Tommy White's bat to ball skills are just so extraordinary that that's where you're making up that money. But in terms of profile, I think they're similar players. Billy Amick's swing is really impressive. Tons of strength, tons of bat speed, definitely a power over hit type, but it's a ton of juice. I think he showed better than many scouts were expecting him to show at third base. I'm not super convinced that he's like definitely going to stick there, but he showed a lot of power in his pro debut. For me, it's just a matter of like how much swing and miss are you going to have moving forward? What is the defensive profile going to look like? But in terms of like where they got him and how much they signed him for, I think that was great value. Moving straight into Dayson Hill, this was kind of like a personal favorite for me. He was like a sleeper pick entering the year. That's probably the best sleeper pick that I have of the 10. That I had. We maybe don't need to mention all the others, but Dayson Hill was at least one that I hit on. He signs for just under $2 million. Again, another pitcher like you can project on him a ton. 6'4", really thin, 170-pound frame. The fastball ticked up, the slider ticked up. Even the curveball, it sounds like he's throwing two breaking balls now, and the curveball after signing sounds like that is a pretty good pitch. So a lot to like with a high school left-hander that has a ton of strength projection on his frame. Seeing how much weight he'll add in pro ball, I think will be one of the things I'm looking forward to just monitoring moving forward, because he's so thin that it wouldn't surprise me if he's just one of those guys that's hard to stack weight on. Some scouts brought up like Guardians right-hander Tristan McKenzie as a player to reference in terms of that kind of body type, but I liked him as well, and he got $2 million at pick 69.
Yeah, I like that pick a lot. From an arm standpoint, and then switching gears to the hitter, Sadim Jow was an intriguing one in the third. I think seeing the pick in real time, it was an eyebrow raiser. I had him as like a more of a middle day two type than an early day two type, but I think that there are tools with him to be excited about, and there is this potentially up the middle profile, and I think that he's this really intriguing athlete, and it shows both in the box, behind the plate, and then also in the outfield where he got some run in his pro debut. I think that he was in center field for a handful of games. Pretty advanced and plus contact skills. I think he had a 90% overall zone contact rate, max EV of 108 this year at Loyola Marymount. I think, again, I'm curious to see how much power he can get to professionally, but that's another one where there's a fun blend of tools and upside. And then a little bit further down the board in the ninth round, Jason Doctorchick from Nevada, 6'6" righty. Fastball is a little bit underwhelming from a velo standpoint, but I think that the slider is a really solid off-speed pitch. I'd give it a you know, it's got 55 potential. I'm curious to kind of see what role they use him in, but good body, advanced strike thrower, fastball slider is a fun little 1-2 punch. And then Christian Becerra in the 12th round, reliever all the way, but his fastball is, I think it plays up from the velo. I think it was at Cal, it was only maybe 2-4 up to a 5, but it plays up in the top of the zone thanks to its big time riding life, mixes in a really effective curveball. I think that's a solid reliever type to get on day 3.
Yeah, and then another day 3 arm I'll mention, Michael Ross, Samford University, 18th rounder, 150K, he signed for. He was injured in 2023, but came back and had a really loud 2024 season. He's always been a really good strike thrower, walked just 5.3% of batters. Last spring, his career rate is sub 6%, which is pretty impressive. Low 90s, touches 94, has a changeup and a slurvy breaking ball in the upper 70s. So that's another one. I know the Twins are also really excited about Michael Carpenter in the 11th round, who was their kind of big day 3 signee. But yeah, a lot of pitching reinforcements in this class for the Twins.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I like the class as a whole. And then I think unless you had anyone else that you wanted to
mention.
That's
all I got.
I'll ask the question I did last week and ask who your favorite class is of everyone.
Yeah, this one's tricky. I mean, I feel like the Guardians is just such an easy choice. They had so much talent. They picked first overall. They took a lot of high school pitchers I like. I mean, Jacob Cozart, we didn't spend a ton of time on, but I like him in the second round, like at various points in the draft cycle. I thought of him as a first rounder. Some of the returns from their day 3 guys are already really exciting, but the Guardians are a cop-out answer for me. So I'm not going to take them. I'm not going to take the team that was picking one overall with like a historically high bonus pool. This was tricky. I'm between Detroit and Kansas City. And the thing that's putting me off Kansas City is I really would have preferred someone else at 6 overall than Jack Caglione, especially with my guy JJ Weatherholt on the board. But I think I'm still going to go with Kansas City despite that, just because a lot of the guys after that I'm just intrigued with. I like David Shields across the board. I love Drew Beam's track record as a starter. I love LP's fastball. We didn't talk about Cannon Brown much, but he has a cannon behind the plate. Andrew Morones is intriguing to me. Like, there's just a lot of guys that I kind of like in this draft class. So even though it's like really pitcher heavy, there's not a bat you can really hang your hat on. I think I might be going with Kansas City. Like, I guess for me, there's not a bat. Many people probably say, you idiot, Jack Caglione is one of the more exciting bats in the class. But like, I have my skepticism there. So if I like everyone else this much that it's like tempting me. And then if like they hit on Jack and he's just a better hitter than I'm expecting him to be moving forward, that's just gravy. So I'll go with the Royals. How about you?
Yeah, Cleveland is my number one. And I think that it's pretty clearly my number one. Obviously, Bazan at the top is that's a really, really good anchor to have. But like I alluded to when talking about him, it's the supplemental pieces that I think put it over the goal line. Like,
are you going to Cleveland? You going with the boring pick, Peter?
Yeah, I'm going boring again. But like Braylon Doty, Joey Oakey, Rafe, like there are 6 or 7 arms that I could name and be really excited about, as well as some interesting day 3 bats. Like Garrett Howe, we didn't talk about much, but he was a really high performer at Samford last year and solidified his draft stock. You talked about Ryan Cesarini. We touched on Cam Schulke in the 19th round. I really like their class as a whole. It's super well-rounded. It's deep. You can point to a number of players and say that they're going to be potentially high-impact big leaguers one day, especially the guys at the top like Bazana, Doty, etc. But second favorite, I would say Kansas City. Okay. I think a lot of it is dependent on what Jack Caglione can do at the plate, not to beat a dead horse, but I'm with you where like LP Langevin was one of my like personal cheese ball type arms in the class. And I'm really happy that they got him. And then we talked about some of the other pieces, I guess, not to harp on Cleveland, but as the resident Jacob Cozart guy of the podcast, how concerned are you at all with his pro debut, which was 5-for-42 with 18 strikeouts? and that would include a 34% overall miss rate, including 60% against sliders and 53% against changeups.
Yeah, it's not good. I mean, my expectations for his bat have cooled quite a bit. I think maybe like halfway through the draft season, it started to. If I'm remembering that wrong, I apologize. But there are some real issues with the hitting ability. But I think overall, like, he's going to be a great defender, I think, behind the plate. It sounds like his receiving was like a massive plus for Cleveland in deciding to draft him. He's got a good arm. He has power. So it's cooled a little bit, but I think where they took him in the surrounding cast in that draft, like, you don't need Jacob Cozart to pan out for this draft class to be a success. So kind of considering him with everyone else, I'm still excited by him, even though, like, I'm not expecting him to be like a fringy or average hitter.
Yeah, I think it's really, you can't do this, and it's also unfair to put a lot of weight on 42 at-bats in high A. Like, obviously, it's not the most encouraging start, and I think everyone wishes that it was better, both in Cleveland and Jacob Cozart himself, but 42 at-bats is a crumb of a crumb of a crumb of a crumb. So just something to watch going forward, but I'm a real big fan of their draft class.
Cool. All right, well, that kind of wraps it up for today. Let us know if you guys have any strong takes on which drafts you liked, any players you're particularly excited about. But that'll do it for today. Peter, any last comments before we get out of here?
No, nothing. We did the plug at the beginning. So I'd say just thank you, everyone, for listening and for your continued support of BA. Like, you are literally why we get to do this. So I'd encourage subscribing if you haven't. It is well worth it. I was a BA subscriber before I was a BA employee, and it was very well worth it. So there's all sorts of content across all levels of baseball, whether it's November 7th or May 7th. So thank you guys for listening and the support.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely appreciate that. All right, guys, we will be back next week with a review of the American League West draft classes. Until then, take care. For Peter, I'm Carlos. See you guys next time.
Christmas cheer starts here at Matalan. The countdown to the big day is well and truly on. And here's your chance to save big. Stock up and slay with 20% off home gifts and decorations in store, online at matalan.co.uk and via the app now. T's and C's apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.